and gentlemen, friends.
Is the singularity near?
The military-industrial complex.
The truth is out there.
The seven mountains of the influencers of culture.
Be as gods, you know,
catapult of propaganda.
From a mostly secure, undisclosed split-level location on a cul-de-sac somewhere in the heartland of America, this is A View from the Bunker. Now, here's Derek Gilbert.
Sometimes it seems as though we Christians put more faith in the ballot box than in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Welcome to A View from the Bunker. I'm Derek Gilbert. Our guest is one of a number of people, over 1,000 actually, who were invited to a special meeting with Republican presidential candidate and presumptive nominee Donald Trump in Times Square recently. Some of the biggest names in evangelical Christianity were there, and we're here to kind of find out what went on behind those closed doors and get a sense for what we might expect to come out of that meeting. Our guest is the president of an apologetics and research ministry based out of Columbus, Georgia, Watchman Fellowship. They're online at watchman.org. We welcome James Walker to the program. James, thank you very much for your time today.
Thanks, dear. Great to be with you.
First of all, I guess, how did you get on the list to get invited to this meeting with Donald Trump?
I still don't know. I've never been a supporter or donor or anything. I was contacted early on, and I was told they were hoping between 100 or maybe even as many as 300. I immediately said, yes, I'll go to that. And I was hoping to be able to ask questions myself, had a list of questions I wanted to ask. But how I got on the list, I'm not quite sure. It was a good opportunity, I think. And especially to meet some other evangelical leaders who also had similar questions to the ones I had.
Hmm. There were quite a few names that people would recognize on the list. Dr. James Dobson, David Jeremiah, some others that...
Jerry Falwell Jr. Yep. Was there. It was kind of a who's who of evangelical conservatives who are also have a voice in politics.
Hmm. What was the sense that you took away from the meeting? You know, Republicans over the years have, in my view, tended to take the evangelical Christian vote for granted. I mean, we've got the Christians in our pockets, so we need to move more to the center to try to appeal to the independent voters who may not hold the same values as Christian voters. Did you get a sense for why Trump's advisors thought it would be a good idea to bring all of you together, and what did you take away from that meeting?
Yeah, my understanding was that they didn't initiate the meeting, that it was a couple of those Christian leaders who went to them with the idea. Initially, when I found out about it, it was supposed to be here in Texas, and the venue got moved, and all kinds of changes as more and more people started coming on board for it. So it came together very quickly, I think 3 weeks or a month of from an idea to actually the meeting happening. I think that the camp, that the Trump camp does know that they don't firmly have the evangelicals. There's a lot of questions about Donald Trump, a lot of apathy. I think just talking to some other Christian leaders that are there, I hear a lot of lesser of two evils talk, you know, and you know, I think anybody in politics knows that you don't get a healthy, vibrant push for votes based on that kind of just being against something else. So mm-hmm. I think at some point they did realize that they need to do something to assure evangelicals that there's some common ground there.
Mm. Lesser of two evils. Obviously, there are Christians who will believe that voting for the lesser of two evils is still voting for evil. There are questions, valid questions that Christians have about voting for Mr. Trump because of his lifestyle, his business, developing casinos, and the entertainment in some of those casinos, not exactly family-friendly. How do Christians approach the election with that in mind, given our choices?
We have to understand that biblically, God often used pagan rulers, emperors, kings, to do his will. And so, you know, the building of the second temple, you know, comes from, you know, the Persian king allowing that, mm-hmm. and God directing and guiding that, although he was certainly not Jewish or a man of God. I wouldn't say that at any stretch. So yeah. God will use nations sometimes and kings to bring judgment against Israel in the Old Testament, but also you find it to bring good as well. So I don't think that someone has to be a Christian to run for office. I don't think there should be a political test. I think a lot of conservatives were concerned with the Jimmy Carter administration, thinking, hey, we're voting for a born-again Christian. And then when the policies in it were enacted, a lot of conservatives were disappointed, I think. And then you found the Ronald Reagan, which at that time, hey, Ronald Reagan's an actor from California who's also been divorced. And, you know, so you have somebody who has a track record of being a born-again Baptist Christian, and this Ronald Reagan. And a lot of the conservatives said, hey, we'd rather have somebody conservative that votes and guides according to our principles than someone who's a Christian and may not.
Hmm. What sort of questions were asked during this session, and how was the give and take set up? I mean, was it a productive meeting? What sort of issues were addressed?
By the time, it wasn't 100 or 300, it was 1,000, more than 1,000 there. Yeah. So it was clear that hardly anyone was going to be able to really ask questions. It came across to me as very scripted. It was kind of emceed by Governor Huckabee.
Hmm.
Mike Huckabee. Of course, Ben Carson was the one who kind of co-sponsored it, so to speak, and was there. But it was maybe about a dozen or less, maybe 8 or 10 of the top evangelical leaders were the ones who got to ask the questions. And even when they asked the questions, it was almost like sounded like they were reading it off a teleprompter. They weren't, but it sounded like that. Very carefully thought out, very carefully worded questions. And there were no questions that were allowed. In fact, even before his motorcade arrived, we were told that there were going to be no biblical or spiritual questions asked. They were saying something like they weren't trying to trick him up with a deep theological question or a Bible quiz. And I wouldn't want to trip him up that way, but I kind of thought, wow, you know, I really was hoping to be able to ask or hope that someone would ask some spiritual questions.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was just disappointing to me. On the positive side, the questions that were asked by the evangelical leaders were some of the same questions I have, and many of our supporters had suggested these questions to me. So he was asked, for example, about, you know, what about the nation of Israel? Under a Trump presidency, are we going to be a friend of Israel again? And he made that very clear that we would, and how he stood for Israel. I believe his daughter is converted to Orthodox Judaism.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Anyway, he was very, very pro-Israel. There were two different types, or maybe even three, questions about religious liberty issues. What about those, our troops, those in the military? Are they going to have the religious freedom to publicly, you know, acknowledge their faith if they're a part of the government or part of our military? And he made that very clear that there would be religious freedom for our troops in the public square as well. There was several cases that were brought up to him, specifics of people who had been either fired or in some other way persecuted because of their faith, and he made it clear that wasn't going to happen. He wasn't even asked about this, but he even threw in about tax exempt status. He said he recently discovered that churches, pastors, could not openly sometimes endorse a candidate because they could have their tax exempt status
Right.
claim. And he said that, hey, people out on Times Square right now have more freedom than pastors do. And if I'm president, I'm going to make sure that's changed. So he was saying a lot of things that I think would resonate with the crowd there, with the evangelicals. I heard some feedback from some of my friends, some of the other leaders that were there. Yeah, but can you trust him? Can you believe what he said? Then I had somebody else say, which would you rather have? Someone who doesn't understand evangelical Christianity but promises to help, or someone who does understand evangelical Christianity and promises to hurt you? Which would you rather go with? And you're kind of back to that lesser of two evils.
Hmm. Yeah. It is a strange situation in which the one candidate from both parties, with the possible exception of Dr. Carson, who has spoken more often about issues that are really key to just how we live our everyday lives. I mean, three main points. Number one, securing our borders. Number two, extricating our military from foreign adventures that really have no bearing on foreign policy. And number three, trying to reconstruct trade deals for the middle class that have really gutted the middle class in recent decades. But then also taking it a step further and addressing issues of religious freedom that many other candidates may pay lip service to. When you look at those key issues from a Christian perspective, the one candidate who seems to understand the least about evangelical Christianity is the one who's saying the right things.
Yeah, you find that parallel even with the Jimmy Carter versus Ronald Reagan. And so you have the conservative Democrat conservative for Democrat, as a Democrat perhaps, but born-again Christian, track record, long track record as a Southern Baptist, you know, running against a divorced, governor, actor, from California. A lot of conservative evangelicals looked at it and said, hey, Ronald Reagan is going to support the policies and conservative fiscally, as far as government intrusion into the affairs of the church, et cetera. This guy's going to lead like we would like it to be led, rather than the guy who's Baptist, but a lot of the policies don't seem to be lining up with what a lot of evangelicals hold as dear.
You said that Trump and his advisors don't get evangelicals, don't really understand evangelicals, and to an extent I can...
That's clear. I think that was clear in the meeting. I don't know anybody that came out saying, oh, he gets us. I think he was uncomfortable, really, his body language and things, but... He even said he only recently found out that tax exempt status could be in jeopardy by supporting a political candidate. Mm. And so that was the brand new information for him. So I don't think he understands when asked questions about faith and faith values, he would sometimes answer about religion, like it was a institution rather than a personal conviction. So mm-hmm. I don't think he gets it, but he seems like he wants to, so he's not, he seems to want to say what everyone there was wanting to hear. And again, it's, whoever's the leader, we need to pray for that person,
right?
Because we are at a crossroads right now.
Well, I can understand that mindset to a degree. I mean, I was raised going to church every Sunday morning, but it really never kind of sank through the shell. My early career in broadcasting was spent as a top 40 disc jockey, basically. And among a group of pastors and theologians and evangelical leaders 30 years ago, I would have been really uncomfortable too, because I would have recognized how little I understood about the faith compared to the people who were making up the rest of the room. So maybe there's some hope there. I hope.
Well, one of the things that came out of the meeting is I think the next day that they announced five or six, I think, of those evangelical leaders were put on a special committee, advisory committee.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what's going on, behind closed doors or anything like that. But I'm hoping that there's some kind of, less formal, more intimate contact, advising, that could be not only just advising, but also a sharing of the gospel and discussing spiritual issues as well. Now, right after the meeting, a couple of days after the Times Square meeting, James Dobson said that he had accepted Christ, that Donald Trump had accepted Christ as Savior, and that mm-hmm. he knew the person who had led him to the Lord. It had been very recently. He didn't give a whole lot of details on that. And he may have even walked away a little bit from some of that. But a lot of my friends are somewhat skeptical about that and all, but I certainly hope it's true. I have no reason to think that it is or isn't, but we need to be praying. Ultimately, our nation, it's going to be spiritual answers, not political answers, that turns our nation around.
Yeah. Well, and to that point, a lot of Christians have been very vocal, very emotional in their opposition to Mr. Trump because of his lifestyle. There are others who are just as energized for him because of the issues that he has addressed that other candidates have not. How much faith, when you get right down to it, and looking at the moral decay in our nation, how much faith should Christians put in the political process to resolve those spiritual issues?
I think it's a unique thing in America that you can't find an exact biblical duplication. You don't find a representative republic example in the Bible that this is how a Christian ought to behave in this type of government. So part of the thing with a democracy or a representative republic is that it's the government of the people. We are the government. And so every time we complain about the government, we're really complaining about us. And so I think part of what we need to do to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar, Jesus told us this, is that that's not just paying taxes. Yeah, that's part of what we render to Caesar. But it really, in this type of government, participation is part of what we owe. We've got to be part of that political system. We've got to vote. We've got to run for office. We've got to be, you know, part of the solution. But I don't think that we find the answer is going to be in those things. And I think a lot of Christians, the pendulum swings too far, and they're hoping that we're going to have some great revival as long as a particular party gets elected, or, you know, this particular president comes in that's going to usher in a wave of spiritual growth and a return to God. That never happens in the ballot box. The only way revival happens is in the hearts of individuals. When they repent of their sins, when we repent of our sins, and we put our faith and trust totally in Christ and Christ alone, that's an individual thing. That's the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I think that's the only answer. You know, you talked about people being so, so conflicted, or Christians being right. So divisive over the issue of Donald Trump. I've never gotten this kind of response. I just, on the plane out there, I just jotted off a quick email to our donor base, to our supporters, and they blew up my inbox. 80% maybe was you know, we're praying for you and tell us what happens. But there were some, and they could not believe I would listen to Donald Trump. And I was like, why am I even listening to this man? I can't even give him the time to listen to what he has to say. I'm basically violating the future of Western civilization. But then there's another percentage, maybe another 10%, and they were angry because I wouldn't endorse him. And I don't ever endorse candidates, but they why would I have any questions? I need to get behind him and endorse him, and I'm not doing that. So the main email I was getting was, whose side are you on? Whose side are you on? So I remember the illustration, I think it was Tony Evans, but politics are like a football game. And so what happens is people want to know, whose team are you on? Who are you behind? Whose side are you on? Are you for the home team or the away team? There's only two teams, so which one is the home team or away team? And really, if you look closely at the field, you realize there's not just two teams on the field. There's a third team, and that would be the officiating team. And I think that's what God is calling us to do, to be salt and light, is to have that independence to be able to signal touchdown when something goes right, but to throw a flag and blow a whistle when something goes wrong. Mm-hmm. And I think if we too much say that that Christianity, if we say Christianity equals this particular political party, mm-hmm. or ideology, then we lose any kind of way of being the referee, of being the officiator. You know, we're part of that. We've identified too closely with it. So we may want to vote that way, you know, but truth of the matter is Jesus is not a registered Republican or Democrat. Mm-hmm. And he said it this way, my kingdom is not of this world. So, yeah, we need to be part of this is part of our world. And we need to get in there and be part of the system to vote and to run for office. But realize that the kingdom of Jesus Christ is never going to see the revival, never going to see this be a nation of God merely by politics and voting. It's going to be the gospel that does that.
Yeah. Party affiliation is not a test for orthodoxy, and you cannot impose morality through top-down. I mean, to an extent, you can enforce morality by imposing penalties for certain transgressions, but if there was a bottom-up revival, a regeneration of human hearts, then you wouldn't need any laws. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've not seen that ever in human history. So I'm not expecting that anytime soon.
But this is the issue that you have. And it's, again, back to the fact that we have a democracy or a representative republic. What you have is the government's only going to be as good as the people are good, because it's a government of the people.
Right.
And so this is why, when, you know, a couple of years back when they had the Arab Spring and the Muslims were throwing off the dictatorship, and now they can go vote. Hey, they're going to be able to vote. Isn't this wonderful? Well, what are they going to vote for?
Sharia.
They're going to vote for the Sharia law. They're going to vote for the very strict jihadists to come in power, and they're going to be what they are. And so we see our version of that. In our country, people are not voting for what we see to be clear moral issues.
Right.
Why? Because they don't have a regenerate heart. You know, so when, you know, 55, 60, 70% of the nation becomes that way, then we are going to be a government of the people and by the people. And our government's going to reflect that.
Yeah.
So I think that's part of what we're up against.
No, exactly right. The reason that the abortion regulations in Texas were overthrown, and of course the reason abortion is even legal at all in the United States is because there are too many people in the United States who don't understand why it's wrong. They don't recognize the moral authority of the Bible.
And it's almost become a religion. In fact, I think it was New York Times, I think, did a story on this. And this, the reaction that happened with the liberals on the Supreme Court decision, had all the earmarkings of a revival of a religious event, and it has become a religion of the left.
Yeah, one might suggest that it is the resurgence of the god Molech, but that's speculation on my part. Why is it that Christians then find it easier to say, complain about politics and then try to fix things through the ballot box than through what we're told is the Great Commission? We received one major standing order from our God, which is to make disciples to the end of the earth. Why do we not fall back on that as our prime directive?
Well, I don't think anybody would acknowledge, oh, I don't believe in the Great Commission anymore. Now, the problem is, like anything else, to believe in it and to do it are two different things.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, they'll support it. And I think maybe that's easier. It's easier to cast a vote and spend 1 hour out of the year than it is to change a lifestyle. and that might be part of what we see. So the two extremes, we as Christians are always wanting to be off balance. So we either want to say, well, politics is not the answer. I'm mad at both parties, so I'm never voting the rest of my life, and I'm not going to get involved with this. I think that's not a good Christian response to the issue. I think we have to be part of the government. That's what it is to render unto Caesar. But on the other extreme is to think that the spiritual answers to our country is going to be found in a political party or a vote. That just can't happen. No more than Constantine can, by edict, declare the Roman Empire to be Christian. You get more problems than you do success with that, spiritual success.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be one by one, the human heart. That's God's way. That's the only way we see revival.
Hmm. So to sum up, what is your bottom line then after that meeting with Mr. Trump? Were you encouraged? What can we as Christians expect to come from that meeting? Any changes in the candidate?
Well, we do see that he put together that advisory committee of evangelicals. I'd say one good thing, this takeaway from that, is that this is not a 2 hour having the ear of Donald Trump. You know, if there's a follow up, and I see no reason why there wouldn't be with that advisory committee, I think there's going to be opportunities to continue to express concerns, explain why that we have particular positions, why these things are very important to us, religious liberty issues, Supreme Court nominees, issues like abortion, things like this, to explain why these are critical issues for us. So to have the ear of someone who could be the president of the United States is you know, nothing to minimize.
Hmm.
I'd like to see a similar meeting with Hillary Clinton. You know, would she come hear our voice, answer some of our questions? I would love to see that. I don't know that that's going to happen, but I would certainly go if there was a possibility of asking some questions.
And again, we should remember that we are commanded to pray for our leaders, regardless of what political party they come from. So
that's right.
Yeah.
Respect the office.
Well, James, just to, so people are for people who aren't familiar with Watchman Fellowship, let's talk a little bit about what you do, your work there. What is Watchman Fellowship, and what is your mission?
Watchman Fellowship is an apologetics and discernment ministry. So the apologetics meaning defending the faith. I'm a former Mormon, and when I became an evangelical Christian, Watchman was there and helped me way before I became the president of the organization. Mm. I was helped by the ministry of Watchman Fellowship. So what we do is we reach out to people of other faiths, everything from Muslims, Buddhists, Jehovah's Witnesses, Mormons, people involved in counterfeit Christianity, the occult, Church of Scientology. We have files and information on thousands of different religious movements and leaders and doctrines. But we also train Christians how to interact with their family, neighbors, people that are of another faith, and how to speak the truth in love, realizing people of other religions are not our enemies. They're our mission field. And except for God's grace, any one of us, we could be in an alternative faith or some type of false religion.
Yeah.
If we were there, how would we want the Christian to respond to us? What would we want a Christian to tell us? Let's be that kind of friend.
Yeah.
So we provide tools and resources to help Christians do exactly that. Mm.
I spent 20 years in sales before returning to my broadcasting roots and joining Skywatch TV. And one thing I learned over 20 years of sales is that people usually don't respond well to being told that what they think is true and right is wrong and that everything they know is wrong, because they tend to internalize that as you're stupid. And surprisingly, that doesn't seem to work well.
Yeah, it's I tell our people, our staff, being right is not enough. That's a good start. But being right is not enough. We've got to win on every level, on the emotional, psychological level. We've got to build conversations, relationships. People are looking, that's my nature even. But most Christians were looking for that magic question or that one Bible verse that's going to prove that we're right and they're wrong. Evangelism rarely works this way. Mm-hmm. It's built on relationships, building relationships. Earning the right to ask the question, letting them see Christ lived out in us. That's where we see the fruit usually, not because we have some very powerful argument.
Yeah. Well, that's important work. Would you mind at some point down the road if we talk with you further about specifically the mission of Watchman Fellowship?
I'd love to do that.
Yeah. It was apologetics that finally broke the back of my doubts. Again, raised in the church every Sunday, but really not internalizing it until I got hit with a spiritual 2x4 to the head. But then it took the reading and studying the reasons that we can trust the truth claims of Christianity that convicted me. And that didn't happen until my mid-30s, so I'm kind of making up for lost time.
Every Christian ought to be doing this. Sometimes we have the right answers by accident. You know, why we believe the Bible. Well, why not the Bhagavad Gita? Why not the Quran? Well, I just do. Well, you lucked up and got one right, but there's reasons why
yes.
we believe the Bible, and there's reasons why it's historically to be trusted and things like that. These are great questions that every Christian ought to know for themselves, but also be able to share with others.
Absolutely. James Walker is the president of Watchman Fellowship, Christian Research and Apologetics Ministry, offices around the country, but based out of Columbus, Georgia, and they're online at watchman.org. James, pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to doing it again.
Thanks, Derek.
Next week, we'll talk about the prophetic implications of Brexit. Does Britain leaving the European Union change prophetic models that looked for the seven-headed, ten-horned beast to be a revived Roman Empire based on the European Union? Or is it just is there no change at all? Bill Salas wrote an interesting and insightful article about that at his website, prophecydepot.net, and we'll talk to him about that. That'll be next week's program on A View from the Bunker. Our weekly Bible study, the Gilbert House Fellowship, features an hour each week on the New Testament and the Old Testament. We're going through both of the Testaments in chronological order, the order of the events that are recorded in the Bible. So we jump around back and forth between the different Gospels. We might hit all four Gospels in the same week. And in the Old Testament, we're skipping back and forth right now between Psalms and 2 Samuel, many of the Psalms written by David, and it kind of makes them easier to understand, or at least understand the mindset of David as he was going through certain things, like the rebellion of Absalom. So we record those and post those by midday Sunday. Those studies and the archives going all the way back to Genesis 1:1 are posted at gilberthouse.com. gilberthouse.org. That's gilberthouse.org. This coming week, of course, the 4th of July week, and as such, Skywatch TV is in the middle of a couple of weeks devoted to the new book, When Once We Were a Nation. 12 chapters devoted to what America has lost as a country and how we might get it back. Authors include Tom Horn, Josh Peck, Donna Howell, Chris Putnam, Lieutenant Colonel Bob McGinnis, Joe Artis, Sheila Zielinski, and me. So that will be featured on Skywatch TV this week. The show airs multiple times per week. If you want a list of dates and times, you'll find that at skywatchtv.com in the top menu bar where it says channels. But the program will also be available on the Skywatch TV channel on Roku by Monday morning. And this coming week, we'll also have the opportunity to see first the new ARC encounter. Josh Peck, Sharon, and I will be going to the ARC encounter for Media Day. That's on Wednesday the 5th. Or is it Tuesday the 5th? Tuesday, I believe. And we'll be recording interviews with many of the principals there from Answers in Genesis, Ken Ham, and some of the other folks connected to this project, the life-size recreation of Noah's Ark. And we'll be bringing that back, that video, for Skywatch TV. You'll see that coming up in the weeks ahead on Skywatch TV. We appreciate you watching or listening to A View from the Bunker. Remember, View from the Bunker is now available on YouTube. YouTube, yes, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. That's D-E-R-E-K Gilbert. And if you do choose to watch the video sections, we're going to try to incorporate more video in the programs going forward. But I appreciate you subscribing to the new channel and then sharing the videos around with your friends and family members. Again, youtube.com/Derek Gilbert. Or if you check us out on iTunes or Stitcher, we appreciate your reviews there. And we remind you that A View from the Bunker is a production of Gilbert House and released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License. The opening theme is by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. And we do this because we wrestle not against flesh and blood. I'm Derek Gilbert, and this is A View from the Bunker.